This is the Coast 89.7 Weekly News Magazine, Dialogue, highlighting local news stories and events in our Cape Breton communities.
Hello and welcome back to Dialogue on the Coast 89.7. I'm Bill McCush. This week we'll get some advice on how to best manage our money as prices soar during the pandemic. Cape Breton's rolling out the welcome mat for Nova Scotia Music Week on its silver anniversary. And CBU recently announced the Sons of Member Tour are the university's 2022 artist in residence. And for our first segment this week, we're going to hear from the group's Jeff Ward, who is also the general manager of the Member 2 Heritage Park.
Hear the song that is sung by the four winds, for it is the voice of our awakening, which heralds the rebirth of Oloi.
What's
Sons of Member 2 represent us coming together in a good way, and what it does is we're passing on the teachings and the songs of our nation, and we've made that commitment of learning the songs, of sharing our teachings, and being there for our communities, being there for our family, our friends, and also the mainstream society. We want to share our culture, share our history, and share our teachings in a good way. And it's so important that we and that's why when we sing either the Mi'kmaq Honor Song, the Gathering Song, or any of the songs that we wrote or were given to us, or the ceremonial songs, or the children's songs, there's so many different, it's like facets of a diamond. There's so many different angles, and it's very beautiful. So, and I think it's so important, and it's something that we say as either drum keepers. I've heard Daryl Bernard, our main drum keeper, had said this many times, as well as his mother, Pauline Bernard, who's a great teacher and tells us a lot too, and teaches us. And as, even our local Sakama, our chief, will talk about, and when he talks, and a lot of our leaders, when we, and like Janie Meter, another great elder, Daryl's sister, we say, since time immemorial. And it's so important that just one sentence from since time immemorial, since as long as we could remember, we heard these songs, we knew these songs, we knew these teachings. And that's why a lot of times when I say there's certain songs that we sing, we would say they've been here since the beginning of time. So that's important. These are not songs that are just 13,500 or 10,000, but some are, since some came to us in 1983 in a vision quest. Some came to us in 93 in a vision quest. Some were taught to us at certain times in our lives from other tribes and other nations. But you have to remember that our teachings come back from the original teachings from Creator.
You know, Jeff, to describe the sound of the drum, the drum represents a heartbeat. Can you talk about that, please? What does the sound of the drum represent exactly?
Well, I always ask this one question to people. What was the very first sound you heard in your life? And when I have a group of people and I have students, and especially I have little kids, I ask that question. And, you know, we get all the funny answers. And, oh, my mom crying, my dad crying, oh, my God, heard the doctor, heard this. You know, I give you a hint, and then I will beat on my drum and hear that and make that heartbeat noise. And I said, there, see that? It's the very first sound we all heard. Every single human being heard the same sound. The very first sound we all heard was our mother's heartbeat. And that's what the drum represents, the heartbeat of Mother Earth, the heartbeat of your mom, the heartbeat of our nation. So, and you take that drum and you take our songs, and when you hear it, people are drawn to it. And first thing they'll say, a lot of people say, oh, I must be Mi'kmaq. And I'm saying, you might be, but you should check 23andMe, Ancestry.com. But you also might, the reason why you're drawn to it is because you have a heart. And that also, one of the secrets to our songs and our ceremonies is that heartbeat of Mother Earth. We take you back to a time when you only knew love, when your mom was carrying you in that sacred water. And everybody talked funny around you, and they were happy to see you, and they were happy to see your mom carrying you, and she had a glow, and it was a beautiful time. And you only knew love, and you were just a peanut, and you were in that sacred water. So you take those teachings of that sacred water, that sacredness of your mom, that bond, that first sound, and that's what it's all about. It's not just instruments, and instruments are great, but it's more than that. It's the deeper meaning to that. So it's important that we share that.
And in the Mi'kmaq community, Jeff, song and drum, they mark very special occasions and milestones and events in the Mi'kmaq community. And this helps to set a very spiritual tone in these very important events.
A drum and a song. A song is always sung to begin any ceremony. From ceremony of birth to a ceremony of your first steps, a ceremony of marriage, a ceremony of peace, a ceremony of signing a treaty. These there were songs that were sung, and same with coming together as a powwow or a gathering. And it's important that people know the difference between a powwow and a Maui'omi and ceremony and Sundance, because as they may appear and look the same, but they're done for different purposes. Where a Maui'omi or a powwow is very intertribal, all nations, all colors, there's things for sale, there's crafts, there's food, and there's competition. It's fun, it's beautiful, you're sharing songs. And when you look at ceremonies or a Maui'omi or a Sundance, people make a commitment to live a certain lifestyle. And it's a very spiritual commitment, and it's a beautiful, it's very beautiful because it's about making a commitment to the teachings. And as much as they appear the same, sometimes they're different, and where a ceremony is very different in regards to, it has some of the elements that is a powwow, but when you come to the Maui'omis or ceremonies or the Sundances, there's a lot more protocol and teachings that are involved, and that's so important for people to know that.
When you say Maui'omi, how is that different from, let's say, a powwow? And what does that word mean?
Well, Maui'omi is one of those things that kind of sit between a powwow and ceremony. And a Maui'omi is a gathering, a Maui'omi. So we're coming together, a Maui'omi. It's very important that we acknowledge that, Maui Don Itch, like it's to unite. You'll hear that even in our songs. You hear that in the Mi'kmaq honor song. So that's important to know, too, that some of our songs have Mi'kmaq words, and some of them are just chants. And what is the difference? Well, the thing about a chant, it's a very spiritual language, and it's between you and the spirit. And it's a very and so therefore, in all nations, we all have chants. And so this is a very, it's almost like that cry. When you were first born, you cried. Or when you hear something funny, you laugh. And when you really think about it, and I do that a lot here at the Heritage Park, when I have a group of people, I'll say, okay, in your language, and sometimes they're speaking Mandarin, Spanish, French, English, Mi'kmaq, Maliseet, whatever they're speaking, I'll say, all right, in your language, I want you to cry. Now, in your language, I want you to laugh. Now, you see, the first two languages that we speak, we could all understand each other. Isn't that truly amazing? So that same thing happens with chants. But we have to learn the meaning behind of things, what we do. So, and then once we learn, it's kind of like that education that we need. Because what is the opposite of love? It's actually fear. It's not hate. The opposite of love is fear. And why do people fear what they do not know? Well, if you don't know about the meaning of our songs and what we do, you're scared of us. So that's why the Heritage Park, Member 2 Heritage Park, and Sons of Member 2, what we've been doing, and we've been on world stages, that's why we do that. We want to teach as many people as we can not to fear us, so they could learn.
And speaking of the world stage, I was hoping to find a spot for this. The Sons of Member 2 were invited as special guests overseas for the 100th anniversary of the Battle of Vimy Ridge, and I'm just going to play a bit of that right here. We're going to hear our old friend from the CBC here, Peter Mansbridge, speaking, but in the background is the Sons of Member 2, and I'll just come back to you for a question just after this clip right here.
Descendants of Sir Arthur Currie here today, and a lot of descendants of Vimy veterans are here today. One of them's with Nala Aye. Nala.
Peter, you're right, a veteran and also a descendant, and his name is Claude Guimond. He's from the Sankey First Nation. Welcome.
Thank you.
Just wondering why it was important for you to be here today.
Well, one of the major reasons I come over here, well, actually I have two reasons, but the major reason is I have my great-uncle, William James Morso. He's memorialized on the Vimy Memorial, and he saw a lot of action in the First World War from 1916 on, and he was killed October 1st, 1918, in an action called the Battle of Canal du Nord, and his body was never recovered, so that's why he's being memorialized on the Vimy Memorial.
So there you have it, Jeff. The Sons, a member to one of the many times being on the world stage. Can you talk about what was it like to be involved with that event, the 100th anniversary of the Battle of Vimy Ridge? And by the way, that was back in 2017. So, yeah, what would you like to say about that, Jeff?
Well, I think it started a very long, long, long time ago. And there's a lot of people we have to acknowledge. And I guess one of the most important people, especially when it comes to Sons of Member 2, is Daryl Bernard. And Daryl Bernard Sr. was our drum keeper. And those four people that came together in the beginning, Mickey Herney, Terry Marshall, Graham Marshall, and Daryl, they came together and they formed, they were the original four. And then from there was so many people, like a very famous individual who's a famous actor right now, Glenn Gould. He was part of Sons of Member 2. There's a lot of local other people that were part of it too and grown, and as well as myself, Austin Christmas, J.R. Isidore, Brian Marshall. These are amazing people and women. And then the women also have their own group, but they also join our group too as well. So they were a part of what we do. And you know, because our wives, our mothers, our aunts, our sukis, our sisters, our cousins, they're part of it too. And there's a lot of little kids too that drum with us. So that allowed us to go. And then from there, we met a lot of people on the way, and a lot of people saw us, saw what we did. And even when we, our training convention center, we call it our house because we did a lot of opening songs there, and we welcome a lot of people. We welcome the world here in Member 2. It's so important that we share that. And so what happens, we tend to, I guess, pave that way to get to that level, to go from, you know, around local to local funerals, to local weddings, to local, to provincial, to federal. And then eventually we're at world stages like we were that time. And it was a true honor. But one of the most important things, I guess, was 4 days before we were on the big stage and for film. 4 days before that, we actually had a sacred fire and a ceremony at that area at Vimy Ridge, which to me was so important to acknowledge our veterans. So I dedicate, and the reason why we're there is because of our veterans and because of our elders who signed up and fought in these wars, and they weren't even considered Canadian citizens. So that's important that we must tell those stories too as well.
Well, I guess in that case, there would probably be no group more appropriate to be invited to play at that ceremony at that particular time of the event.
It was truly an honor. And that song that was sung, the gathering song, is so important because the gathering song and the Mi'kmaq honor song, I am very closely connected to because it was my uncle, George Paul of Mitibinagia, who brought that song and many songs to the forefront. And there was a lot of other drummers and groups that are out there. And I'm one of the original members of my uncle's group, Thunder Eagle Singers. And those songs, like that song, the gathering song that we sing, are so important. And that's what my uncle talks about that. And so we have a songwriter that we must acknowledge is Pauline Bernard, Daryl's mother, who wrote a lot of her songs too, as well as Shirley Christmas, as well as George Christmas and Pudi. And there's many other people that we come together with written songs and we bought songs, plus the ancient songs too. It's a fine balance that we must also make sure. And then, of course, we have our powwow songs, which are very intertribal and very loud too as well, and they're beautiful melodies too as well. And then there's our fun songs or our gojwa songs, our traditional songs. So there's, and see, once again, like a diamond, many facets, and there's many different angles that we could talk about.
Yes, indeed, Jeff, many angles. One of them that I wanted to cover, some very exciting news for the Sons of Member 2 lately, being named the Artist in Residence for CBU for 2022.
Oh, we're very humbled, and you know, it's in to have that and have that ability to be artist's resident, and because there's I always believe in Cape Breton and Unamagi, but in Cape Breton here we have the best of the best. We have the best fiddlers, Lee Cremo, but also the many that are out there right now. And there's so, like, you know, and then there's the Rankin family, and there's the McNeils. There's so many artists, and I can go on and on, right up to the local new guys that are out there, too, Jason, musician. And there's so many others that I'd want to mention. But I believe here in Cape Breton Island, we have the best of the best. And it's so important. I mean, we have best songs written, a lot of the best songs that are written here. And it's so important that we celebrate that. And to be among that and to be recognized during this time, it was a great honor, and it's one way of when we talk about reconciliation is recognizing who we have, so allowing us to be that other side, saying yes, we have we could be part of the stage too as well, and I mean, we're on the world stage, international. There's no bigger stage than that.
So through this program, can you talk about some of the experiences and some of the ways that people can participate during this residency for the Sons of Member 2?
There's like 13 experiences that we offer here at the Member 2 Heritage Park, and it's important to know that we're offering all these experiences when we talk about the different types of workshops. One of which I'm very excited about, and I don't want to get off track here, but one is actually making your own hand drum. So we're actually going to be doing that at CBU. As a drum maker, I am teaching people on how to make a hand drum, a moose hide hand drum, which is truly, truly, truly amazing. A lot of workshops that we do here, like how to be an ally in reconciliation workshop, because it's important and people know the importance of reconciliation, because there's a word before the reconciliation. It's truth in reconciliation. We must know the truth first. And once we learn the truth and acknowledge the truth and allow that truth to soak in, then we can work on reconciliation. And what does that look like? What is the real action? The real action. And so these are perspectives that we have to. And then there's many dangers in any many types of allyship, you know. So we got to make sure that if you're going to be an ally, you want to be an ally with good intentions, with love in your heart. You know, there's allyship that may appear to be allyship, but don't have the right ingredients in it or the right intentions. And that's important. And as you see what's going on in the world today, we see a lot of that. So it's important to acknowledge that.
Well, do you have hope for that, Jeff, that people are taking the time to understand each other more? And often it's just a matter of listening and sharing information. But you are hopeful that, you know, more common ground will be discovered?
Well, I'll say this. After every storm, and after every time it rains, the thunderstorm, no matter how bad the storm is, when that sun comes up, I see a rainbow. And when I see that rainbow, that reminds me of the Creator. The Creator told us, when you see this rainbow, it's a guarantee, it's a hope. So these teachings that we're doing, I believe in them 100%. In that way, I believe wholeheartedly we're making a change in this world. And that rainbow is that confirmation that tomorrow's going to be a better day. And that we will learn to accept one another unconditionally. Because that's really the challenge right now. When will Indigenous knowledge be accepted unconditionally? That's important to know that. And when that will happen. So it's happening in a sense, but there's still challenges and we still got to work on some things. So I have hope.
Yes. And are you feeling that young people especially are expressing an interest in the Mi'kmaq culture?
Oh, 100%. I've seen it. All our kids here in Membertou and Eskasolony, Waikagama, Wagmakook, Chapel Island, and all through Unamagi in the mainland too as well. We all, I believe at one time or another, we've all been to ceremony. So we all know where home is. And that's so important. And what they choose to do and where they go from that, that's up to each person. But they know where home is and that culture is home. And it's not just our own children. It's across everywhere. Because we provided hand drums in all the schools in Nova Scotia. We provided a lesson of the honor song all through Nova Scotia. So it's a beautiful time for everybody to learn and see that.
Jeff, I'd like to ask you about those drums, actually. You know, it's certainly nothing that you would find at a music store, that quality, or something you could buy off of Amazon. It's really a labor of love, and just for anyone who has seen one up close, it's just a remarkable piece of equipment. Can you talk a little bit about how they're constructed and why they are so important in the Mi'kmaq culture?
Well, and that's one thing that we teach in the workshops that we say here. It's more of an assembly of the workshop, because then you have to go and you have to understand that there's more teachings to it. And there's a whole spirituality to it. There's a whole other way of actually when the rims were actually made a year ago, or when that tree was taken, or when that tree was given or donated, and then that would have started with a prayer. A prayer would have been, or tobacco would have been offered to that tree, and we give thanks to that tree, and then the whole process of that tree turns into a rim. So that takes a whole year, as well as when that moose was in the highlands and minding its own business, and somebody came along who used it for food. We used the whole, like, antlers, everything. So we use as much as we can in practice. We're supposed to use 100% of that moose. So we use as much as we can, and the hides are being used. So everything that we're doing, so that a prayer was also done before that moose's life was taken, and the food was given to the people, and then the hide was used. And the hide is that takes about a year, whole long process of taking all the fur off, taking all the fat off, stretching it out, soaking it, cleaning it. There's a whole process to that. So when it gets here as a kit, drum making kit, that, and then it still takes 2-3 hours to assemble it and put it together and learn all the teachings. And then to learn the songs, it sometimes can take a lifetime. So we're always learning, and it's a longer process. But once people come and make, I had an elder just come through one of my workshops, and he told the whole group, he said, once you do this, you'll never haggle for the price of a hand drum ever again. And when we were done, everybody like kind of nodded their head. They're like, wow, that was hard. So they understood. And like I said, the reason, a part of it is that heartbeat. We all have a heartbeat, so it will draw you. This other part of it is its vibration. And if you watched a lot of or did studies on vibrations, you know, vibrations helps heal people in a certain way. So if you're using it at certain frequencies, it actually helps heal and battles against cancer and many other stuff that's out there that once you know about vibrations and how it works and acknowledge it, and then you realize we're not making noise. So if people are being disrespectful, and when you see it on the news, they're just banging on a drum and singing the yabba-dabba-doo, it really hurts, because that is not who we are. And if you go to say yabba-dabba-doo, you better have a bunch of kids around you, and it's going to be a children's song, and I hope you're passing out candy, or making donations to the Membertou Heritage Park, or making donations to an organization that helps kids, because that's the other part that we see out there. But once you know the true reason and the sacredness behind of what we do in our teachings, it's a whole different game. And for those that did what they did do in Ottawa or at protest, we forgive them. We send them love. I send them love. I personally will send them love because they need to really learn, and I pray for them.
And Jeff, there's something else I'd like to ask you. It may be a little bit off subject, but it would have been a few years ago now. There was a gentleman by the name of Gilbert Sewell who recently passed away, unfortunately, and he was an elder from Pabinot First Nation in northern New Brunswick, and he talked about where the word news came from. And he said it had to do with storytelling and gatherings and people sharing information, indigenous communities sharing information thousands of years ago. And they would gather from the north, from the east, from the west, and from the south. And Gilbert had talked about that is where the word news came from, that it was borrowed from that tradition.
It was my mentor. He was an uncle. He was very close. He was actually a cousin, and Gilbert had some great, great knowledge. And, I'm kind of speechless because I really miss him. And, my God, that's truly, that's where news come from. And he had so many stories, and he had so many, he could tell you where you came from or how people were connected, and he was great at that. And he had the greatest gift ever, and I truly miss him. So thank you for that.
Oh, my pleasure, Jeff. I didn't realize that you would have known him, but not surprised, too. He was a very classy guy, very knowledgeable fellow, Gilbert Sewell. And I see that we're just about running out of time here, Jeff. Is there anything you'd like to mention that I haven't asked you, or anything you'd like to mention about the Sons of Member 2 and the residency?
I just want to say we owe it to our friends, our family. We've come together and we've done a lot of things together. And I think it's that commitment that we made, and a lot of people will, we make a commitment, a spiritual commitment to pass on our teachings and to be there for one another. And for CBU and for many people to recognize us, because it's not just CBU, a lot of even local people and people, modern day or mainstream society people and people in town, they'll say, hey, I remember you guys a long time ago. You guys are still awesome. They're so happy when we earned that. So people don't understand. They don't know that a lot of our ceremonies went underground. A lot of our songs went underground because it was against the law for us to do ceremonies 69 years ago. It was against the law for us to do ceremonies or even to sing our songs. So they would take our drums. They would take a lot of things away from us. So that's not long ago. But now we're here, and we brought them out again to share. And these are ancient songs that we've known for a very long time. Some people may have lost them. Some people might have just kept them hidden. It's not a revival, more of a reteaching mainstream society. So we thank you guys so much for in the love.
BDO Debt Solutions says if there was ever a time for Canadians to stress test their debt and put in place a plan to pay it down, it is now because of rising inflation. Dialogue's Dave DeVoe had a chance to catch up with Senior Vice President Paul Moffitt.
The latest numbers that have been released show that inflation is up 5.1% year over year, and that is the highest increase that we have seen in over 31 years. The reasons for it are varied. We've had, it's due to the ongoing pandemic, there are some supply chain issues and other influences that are brought on by climate change. And the expectation is that these record rises will continue for the foreseeable future. So just to give you a few examples, this time last year, Nova Scotia gas was somewhere around $1.15, $1.20 a liter, and now that's somewhere around $1.55, $1.60. So that's a 30% plus increase year over year for gasoline. In the grocery aisle, we're seeing meat up 13%, fish up 9%, bacon up 24%. Bacon, don't take away my bacon. Fresh fruits up 8%, and the Canadian Dairy Commission has announced that the price of dairy products is going up another 8% next month. And that's just the dairy aisle. There's just housing is up, vehicles, cost of vehicles is up, cost of appliances is up. And so, you know, these are significant. And as I said, they're the biggest we've seen in a very long time. What's also worth noting is that according to Statistics Canada, wages over that same time period have only risen up by about 2.4%, which means that Canadians are actually losing purchasing power. And so the government of Canada does have one tool to quell runaway inflation, and that is to increase their overnight lending rate, basically to raise interest rates. And they have hinted that we could see a rate hike on Wednesday, March the 2nd. Economists are predicting that could be somewhere around 0.25%, maybe 0.5%. But what we do expect that this will be the first of at least a few rate hikes over the next year. So what this means for the everyday person is that anybody who's carrying any kind of a variable rate mortgage or perhaps a regular line of credit or a home equity line of credit or variable rate interest rate credit cards, this means that their monthly payments are going to go up. And what we know from our own BDO affordability index is that people are carrying more debt than they used to, and they've had to rely on getting by using credit as a result of the pandemic. So as of the end of last year, the household debt for Canada hit a record $1.77 of debt for every dollar earned, and that's significant. So this continued, you know, increase in the cost of living, while at the same time, you know, so as I said, you know, the cost of living has gone up for shelter, for transportation, for food, and now the cost of borrowing is going to go up too. And this is just going to add a financial strain to people, and we are concerned that that this is going to be the financial tipping point for many.
So what to do in the face of all that?
Now is the time to do a few things. Firstly, it is not the time to take on more debt. But what I do advise is, firstly, is now's a good time to what we call stress test your debt. And basically that means take a look at what your monthly payments are for your debt obligations and say to yourself, okay, can I afford that now? And if you can't, we'll talk about that in a moment. But if, you know, what does that mean if interest rates go up by 0.25? What does that mean if interest rates goes up by 1%? What does that mean if interest rates go up by 2%, which is, you know, that's a possibility by the end of this year? And so if, you know, take your debts that you have, and if interest rates go up by 2%, what is that going to mean to your monthly obligations? And are you going to be able to afford it? So so now also, and I've said this time and time again, budget, budget, budget. We know that roughly a half of Canadians don't have a budget that they actively use. And you know what? Quite frankly, if you don't have a budget, you should make one. But at the same time, I always strongly recommend that people just start tracking your expenses. You know, take 3 months and record every single penny that comes in and out of your household for a 90-day period and write it all down and categorize it. And I can guarantee you one thing, that at the end of that period, you'll realize you will be surprised at some things. You'll be surprised, oh, wow, I didn't know I spent that much on this, and I didn't know that I spent this much on that, or I thought I was spending more on this. And, you know, but what that will do is that will allow you to kind of look at your household and say, all right, well, where can I cut? You know, is there subscriptions that I have for either music or streaming services? Do I have cable TV that I don't really need? Look at my phone plans. Can I drop my landline? Is there other phone plans that I can go on? But the number one thing that I generally see that people can do to minimize their costs or to reduce their costs is how it is they feed themselves. Are they eating out? Are they buying, you know, already prepared foods? Are they eating from scratch? Or are they cooking from scratch and meal planning? So these are all excellent tools that you can use to reduce the amount of money that's going out of your household.
I see some financial planners have advised people that have credit cards to take on debit cards or prepaid cards instead. Is that a good strategy?
Oh, yes, absolutely. As I said a moment ago, now is not the time to use credit. And so, you know, a debit card or a debit Visa, those are things you're not borrowing in those instances, and you're just using and you're living on the cash that you have, and you're not worsening your situation. So absolutely, I think those are a great idea.
Now, what about people who just have no other means and they have to go further into debt?
Ideally, of course, it would be ideal if they did not have to go into any further into debt, of course.
Not always a choice for some people, though, right?
No, you're absolutely right. And that's, you know, if you are to the point where, you know, you've done everything that you can for the budget, and, you know, you're making your minimum payments, or you're using one credit card to pay off another, or maybe you're having to choose between which bills get paid this month or not, if you're receiving calls from creditors or collection agencies, you know, now, that's the time to make that initial call to a financial professional, like a licensed insolvency trustee. And some people will put that off for months or longer because they try and deal with it on their own because they feel embarrassed. They feel the shame. But what I can guarantee you is that your situation is not unique.
And some people might fear, you know, how much is it going to cost me to speak to a financial professional as well, right?
Yes, and so if you want to talk to a licensed insolvency trustee, you know, we do offer a free and confidential appointment. It doesn't cost us anything. And you know what? Even if you don't do anything right now, you know, there's no obligation. If you, just because you talk to a trustee in bankruptcy does not mean you have to go bankrupt or do a proposal or what have you. Just knowing that what the options are, having that knowledge is power. And just knowing that you have options will help you with your stress levels for sure.
One thing I wanted to talk about, as people go through their budget, we like to sort of categorize things into essentials and non-essentials, right? But there seems to be a little bit of subjectivity there. For some people, for example, coffee might not be an essential. For somebody else, it might be an essential part of helping them get through their day. What advice do you give people in terms of drawing that line, because it's not always clear, is it?
No, you're right. When it comes to coffee, or the other thing that comes to mind for me is, you know, eating out for lunch when you go to work. You don't have to go to a coffee shop to get your coffee in the morning. You know, you can go to a yard sale and get a drip percolator for a couple of bucks and buy a can of Folgers for, you know, a fraction of what you would spend to go to the coffee shop every day. So, you know, you do have to do a hard look. If you've looked at your budget and there are just, you know, it doesn't look like it's going to work, then that's when you have to take a hard look at the practices that you do. Are you eating out for lunch every day, or could you pack a lunch and bring it to work? Are you going to the coffee shop and spending money on, I get that, you know, it's first thing in the morning, that it's part of your routine, but hard situations like the one that we see coming is going to require hard decisions.
Now, there may be, in fact, I don't doubt there are lots of people out there who have budgeted very carefully, but who are still living paycheck to paycheck. They've done everything they possibly can to make their life affordable and sustainable, and yet they're still going to be in trouble when this interest rate rise comes, if they're not already. So for people who've done all they can, I guess one piece of advice would be to speak to somebody like you. But for those who might have a bit of trepidation about that, what would you say to them?
Well, it kind of goes back to what I had said a moment ago. If you're struggling financially, the sooner that you reach out to a professional, the more solutions that are going to be available to you. I mean, there's the idea of bankruptcy and a consumer proposal, which is the first two things that generally I do. But it's overcoming that fear and trepidation that somebody's going to judge me and that I'm going to, you know, my name's going to be in the paper. It won't.
But what about people who just decide that they're not going to see a professional, or they're in some kind of situation where it's just logistically or socially difficult for them, and they're in that dire financial position? Any pieces of advice you would give to those people should they be listening?
Well, this is kind of a hard one for sometimes for people to hear, but if you ignore a situation, if you ignore, you know, a situation where you're in debt, and eventually, and you don't make that decision to talk to a professional in order to resolve your debts, eventually that decision will be made for you. In that, and it sounds tough, but eventually banks will hire lawyers, and sometimes those decisions of what happens next isn't in your control anymore. And that goes back to what I had said a while ago. The sooner that you reach out to somebody, the more solutions are going to be available to you.
Before I let you go, Paul, I just want to sort of pick your brain on what might be a little bit of a tangential issue, but there's a lot of discussion these days about basic income. And I know it's a little bit outside your field, but you know, the topic sort of used to be a fringe one, I guess, and now it's creeping its way into the mainstream a little bit. As someone who thinks a lot about budgets, what do you think about the idea of a universal basic income, which again is sort of becoming more of a mainstream discussion now?
Yeah, you're right. That is a little out of my wheelhouse. What I am excited to see that the province of Nova Scotia did announce in January that the plan is to put minimum wage up to $15 by over the course of a number of increases, and by 2024 it's supposed to be up to $15. And that's certainly going to help. My worry is that it's not going to be enough. Not so much that I think that, you know, minimum wage should go to more or less than that, but my worry is that the increases aren't going to be quick enough, and that inflation is going to overtake people before they, you know, they get the benefit of those increases.
Yeah, I know the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives and a few other think tanks and writers have actually calculated the living wage in Nova Scotia is something like $19 an hour or something like that, you know, of course, much higher in other provinces. What do you think about that? Do you think the minimum wage as it stands or as it's heading really is a livable wage?
I would not say, from what I see in the people that I come across with every day, it is hard to make. It's hard to make a go if you are living on a minimum wage, unless you are in a household of two or in a relationship and you can share, you know, the economies of scale for two people living together and sharing rent and or mortgage or car payments and all that stuff. It is difficult to make a pay. It is very difficult to make a go, especially if there's any amount of debt or any extra costs whatsoever.
Even before the pandemic and all of its attendant woes, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. Thanks so much for your time today, Paul, and I look forward to speaking again.
Thank you very much, Dave.
Some very exciting news about music in Nova Scotia. Nova Scotia Music Week is coming back to Cape Breton Island, celebrating 25 years of music, November 3rd to 6th. The last time it was held here in Cape Breton Island was in 2013. And this year, we get to highlight even more Cape Breton talent. We welcome to the program Executive Director of CB Mike, Dwayne Nardacchio.
Thanks for having me.
So folks have never heard of Music Nova Scotia Week. What exactly is it?
You know, Nova Scotia Music Week is a festival and a conference, basically an industry conference that happens, not unlike most of the rest of the country. So Music Nova Scotia is a music association here for Nova Scotia, just as CB Mike is for Cape Breton Island. And Music Nova Scotia are the larger of the two, of course, organizations. And so annually they hold a large festival and conference for basically the promotion of Nova Scotia music. So all these conferences have a delegate component. So the delegates that would come to, say, an event like this would be talent buyers, festival buyers from around the world, and they would come. This is a showcasing opportunity for Nova Scotia musicians, basically. And so there'd be a variety of different style of showcases that would be set up based on people who were nominated and selected by their submissions, and they'd have an opportunity to showcase in front of, like I said, what would be delegates from around the globe, international media, And then, of course, regional and national as well. So it's a great opportunity. It happens every year. And then, of course, along with that, there's a whole conference element as well. So musicians have an opportunity to meet with industry professionals and have one-on-one sessions to talk about their career or take courses or attend conference components that would help elevate their career, give them opportunities to share and interact with people in the industry. And it's just all about advancement and camaraderie and getting down to the music, the business of music, I suppose.
And you being the executive director of CB Mike, and of course all the people that you represent here on Cape Breton Island for music, this is a very exciting announcement.
It is, Bill. I mean, you know, this has obviously been a tough time for a lot of people and a lot of sectors. And certainly the music industry and the gig economy have certainly been one of the heavy hit ones for sure. So for the last 2 years, I mean, we've been doing our best to maintain work within the industry, but it's been very difficult. And, you know, we thrive on the live aspect of the industry. And so that drives a lot. You know, there's a lot of spinoff that happens with live music. So it's not just musician on stage. There's different elements of that. And of course, as you get into larger shows, there's a lot more people involved. There's event planners involved. There's sound companies and tech companies involved, all the sound engineers and lighting engineers. And then, of course, that gives work to venues, and then there's venue rentals, and then there's security, and then there's food and beverage service. And so it goes on and on. And so to have the industry pretty much handcuffed for 2 years has been very, very disappointing and of course, very difficult to deal with. But you can't underlie the fact that we were in a pandemic and we had some things to deal with. And we're obviously concerned about the way we move forward, but obviously we want everything to move forward. And we just want to be able to do our part in that and bring back some excitement to things and get the community back out and enjoying some live music and meeting people and talking again and enjoying all the things that we have to offer. So having a big conference and festival like this to come back to Cape Breton after such a time of being shut down is a major thing for us, and it should create a lot of excitement. The initial pre-sales for Nova Scotia Music Week sold out in 1 day, so that's just a good indication how much there is a sort of a pent-up demand to kind of get back to the grander side of the music thing.
And I see Destination Cape Breton has jumped on board as well. They branded 2022 the Year of Music.
Yeah, absolutely. So this has been a plan. I mean, 2021 was supposed to be the Year of Music, and we had a variety of events that, you know, would have taken place that year. We would have been coming off the tail end of Music Week, Nova Scotia Music Week in 2020, which was canceled by COVID. We had the ECMA's plan for earlier last year that, again, was canceled due to COVID. And then, of course, you know, our other local festivals such as Celtic Colors and Granville Green and stuff like that, things that people would, you know, often be able to take part in. A lot of those were canceled or turned to virtual. You know, we're hoping that things are going to move forward a little bit. I mean, we have a variety of projects planned for this year. And of course, Music Week coming is a big announcement. We'll also hopefully get back to a full in-person Celtic Colors Festival this year. We have a music conference that we are hoping to bring to Cape Breton in September. So there's a lot of things to be excited about, but this one, having this announced now for November and having, you know, Music Week excited about doing that, and of course being the 25th anniversary, just gives us an opportunity to hopefully really do the province proud and put on a great Cape Breton hosted event. It's been, you know, since 2013 that we were able to have them here. So I'm really hoping that we do a great job. I mean, the events landed in Truro and Halifax and Yarmouth over the past few years, but we're really happy to have it back. So CB Mike, Cape Breton Music Industry Cooperative, you know, we're in charge of the local sort of LEC or LOC engagement committee. You know, we'll be rallying all the volunteers for this festival. And, you know, that includes things like hospitality, transportation, volunteer coordinators, marketing, sponsorship, all those types of things. So it gives us a chance to dig deep and get involved. And I think as proud Music Island that we are, I think we're going to be able to do a great job.
Let's say if I was an individual that was interested in volunteering and doing my part, how do I go about doing that?
Well, actually, you can. Anybody could reach out to us directly at the Cape Breton Music Industry Cooperative. So info@CBMike would put you in touch with myself or my admin, And we could certainly, I've already had a number of people reach out and ask, or you can always call me at 902-577-2547. And we'd be happy to take any interest on volunteers, because it's going to probably take about 200 volunteers to put this together. So,
well, the wristband selling out so fast in one day, if that's any indication, looks like we're in for quite the event coming up in November. If I'm listening to this right now, when are the next batch of wristbands and tickets available coming?
That I don't have that information yet. So what we will be expecting is a team from Music Nova Scotia should be coming down, I would say, in the next few weeks, you know, by the end of March, to do a site visit and start coordinating on venues and things like that, and to meet with us and our volunteer committee. So I would say, you know, there could be an announcement at that time. They might make an actual public announcement from here in Cape Breton, and there could be some more updated information on tickets and stuff at that point.
As far as music goes with the CB Mic, you're also part of Nation Cape Breton with another venture as well. You want to tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, for sure. So this was a project that was actually supposed to take off several months ago, but due to COVID and funding issues, it didn't happen, but right now it is. So basically, yes, we've partnered with Destination Cape Breton on a music creation project for Destination Cape Breton. And this is a reach out to look for some songwriters and composers that are from Cape Breton Island, don't necessarily have to be living on Cape Breton Island, but that may have a song in the works, or a song that's been previously recorded but not previously released ever. That might be submitted and could potentially be used for Destination Cape Breton commercials and promotional videos that they use to promote Cape Breton Island all around the globe. So it's a neat licensing opportunity through Destination Cape Breton. And so the idea is you can submit a song to CB Mic for consideration. And then what we will do is, if the song is of, we have a partnering studio with us from Sound Park Studios, Jamie Folds. And so he would be reviewing the quality and of the content that would be available. And if it's usable as is, that's great, great and helpful. But if not, there is a budget for those that are selected to either upgrade or re-record the song entirely. So the call out is there for now. We're hoping we're hoping to get a nice amount of submissions. We've already had a great reach out, so it looks like there's some people that are very interested, and we actually have a few people in the studio now that are prepping for some songs for that. So it's a little exciting, and you know, we're pushing towards to get this wrapped up by the end of March, but if we have to extend a little bit just because of the situation of it being tied up, we'll certainly look at that. But right now, we're just encouraging people to reach out. So you can contact me again at info@cbmic.ca, or certainly give me a call, 902-577-2547. All the information is on our website, which would be cbmic.ca. And you can reach out to us. We'd be happy to, you know, take your questions and try to help you along to make sure that you have an opportunity to get involved.
Well, Dwayne, this sounds like an incredible year of music, as stated by Terry Smith from Destination Cape Breton, and a lot of festivals going on. And, of course, there's the icing on the cake, Nova Scotia Music Week, again coming up November 3rd to 6th as we celebrate the 25th anniversary here in Cape Breton Island. Continued success with CB Mic, and cannot wait for the year that's going to unfold with some great music here, not just in Nova Scotia, but on Cape Breton Island.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Bill. You know, we're going to keep doing our part. So all the best to everybody out there, music lovers alike.
That's all for Dialogue this week. Thanks for listening. I'm Bill McCush.
Catch Dialogue three times weekly, Sunday at noon, Tuesday and Thursday at 10 p.m. Dialogue is a production of the Coast 89.7 News. For story suggestions, contact 902-284-NEWS. That's 902-284-6397. Or email news@coastalradio.ca. For past episodes of Dialogue, check out our Dialogue podcasts, available now online at coastalradio.ca.